Up front next, demonstrators clashing with police and riot gear as China's security forces prepare to go after people for their social media likes. A young Chinese man who is risking his safety to speak out against the communist government is out front tonight. Plus, record-breaking early voting numbers out of Georgia. Less than a week before the formal runoff day, some Republicans are asking why Herschel Walker spent precious days off the campaign trail. And Paul Whelan, the American wrongfully detained in Russia, has reportedly been moved to a prison hospital from a penal colony. What's going on? Whelan's brother is my guest. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, clamping down. Chinese security forces in riot gear clashing with protesters who have been rising up against the Chinese President Xi Jinping's strict zero COVID restrictions. The situation on the ground today in the city of Guangzhou in southern China quickly deteriorating. Protesters hurling glass bottles at riot police. China's police state crackdown is now leaving many Chinese in fear of their lives, knowing the steep price they may pay for criticizing President Xi Jinping and his policies. Today, I spoke exclusively to a young Chinese man who only wants to go by the name Hao. For months, he endured Xi's brutal crackdown on COVID. He's now in the UK, only able to leave China because he's studying abroad, and he's speaking out, protesting outside the Chinese embassy there. He doesn't want to show his face, but he had a lot to say, knowing that what he was about to tell me about Xi could endanger him and his family, who remain in China.
There are many people not comfortable and agree with him, but no one can just maybe say they can't speak out that they don't like him, because if you do, you might be monitored and maybe you'll be arrested. Maybe you're in custody.
And tonight, President Xi is upping the ante, now even liking a post that China deems illegal or harmful on the internet could result in punishment. Now, this is a notable move because social media, even as controlled as it already is in China, is what's fueling the demonstrations. Look at that map. That's just what we know. Demonstrations in at least 17 cities have been taking place across the entire country of China. And social media has been the only way that many in China and those of us outside know what's really happening there. Because if you were to look at the largest run communist newspaper in the world, it's in China, right there. There's no mention of any unrest. All the stories about Xi's meeting with other foreign leaders, it's as if it isn't happening. Now, China is offering up some small gestures to try to ease the tensions. They're now allowing people in 11 of Shanghai's districts to now leave their homes. But it's a very little drop in the bucket and too little too late for many, many millions. The Chinese man Hao told me what he and others endured, and it was incredible to hear it, including this with the food that the government forced on them in lockdown.
There's some box in the foods in the, and there are some residents receiving the bad vegetables, the bad meats, and even some received none of them. They are starving at home, and even someone like died because of the starving. So it's very bad.
Going to hear more from him in a moment. We've been covering these draconian COVID lockdown policies on Out Front for months, and you know it's unforgettable the cries of people that you hear crying out, desperate for medicine, for food, just to get out. Some so desperate that they have jumped to their deaths. Others have been paraded by men in hazmat suits and publicly shamed for breaking China's COVID rules. Security forces have even gone as far as to beat a dog to death after its owner was infected. And tonight, CNN obtaining new video of security forces in hazmat suits beating protesters at the world's biggest iPhone factory, which is in central China. And we're going to have much more on that in just a moment. I want to go to Selena Wang. She is out front live in Beijing tonight. And Selena, what more are you able to tell us about the situation on the ground where you are tonight?
Well, Erin, those attempts by the security forces to snuff out all of these protests appears to be working. Since the weekend, the protests, they've become smaller, more scattered. We've seen the police forces blanketing these key protest sites. There's individual intimidation that appears to be working. We spoke to one protester who said they believe there are even undercover agents inside their Telegram groups. And of course, as we've discussed, there are even police stopping people in Shanghai to check and see if they have banned apps that would allow them to use apps like Telegram. But authorities, they're going to still remain on high alert. State media announcing the death of former communist leader and President Jiang Zemin on Wednesday. There is a chance, Aaron, that this could become a new rallying point for protesters because China has a history of people taking to the streets to mourn the deaths of previous leaders while also using the chance to let out their frustrations about the current government. And Jiang was seen as someone who paved the way for China's emergence as a global superpower. During his leadership, China had this rapid economic growth. It integrated more deeply into the global system, critically joined the World Trade Organization, and won the bid to host the 2008 Olympics. Some scholars are even putting it this way, that he was one of the few Chinese leaders who wanted to become a normal world leader, not a communist dictator. And on Chinese social media, we did see an outpouring of people mourning the former leader and reminiscing about an old era when China was freer and more open to the world.
Now, you know, it's incredible to think about this. You've also been closely following the protests and the crackdowns at Apple's biggest supplier in China, Foxconn. The images here have been incredibly disturbing and unbelievable in so many cases. What are you learning about that?
Yeah, Aaron, that anger and frustration over COVID, no one is immune to it, spilling out from the streets, residential communities, but also inside factories. That chaos at Foxconn, they've been dealing with it since mid-October after a COVID outbreak. They've been dealing with workers fleeing the factory, workers revolting inside the factory. And important that before the pandemic, the fact that Apple relied so heavily on Foxconn, on its supply chains inside China and Asia, it was seen as a selling point. They could get this low-cost, efficient manufacturing. But now that reliance of China on China, it is seen as a liability.
Anger boils over into violent protests at the world's largest iPhone factory. Workers stream out of Foxconn's factory dorms in central China, protesting unfair treatment, dirty living conditions, and chaotic COVID rules at the Apple supplier. Videos obtained by CNN show a group of police in white hazmat suits beating workers with batons and metal rods. The police are hitting people, a worker shouts in the video. A Foxconn employee at the protest told CNN, the scene turned into a river of blood. Police hit the workers ruthlessly. Earlier, squadrons of riot police had rolled in. They're going to start beating us, protesters yelled in fear, facing off rows of law enforcement with riot gear. The protest escalated into the evening, workers tearing down COVID barriers, using metal beams against police. Masses of them hurling metal parts towards law enforcement, even using a COVID barrier as a shield against rows of authorities. They worked together to push over a police car, cheering and chanting. Since October, the Foxconn plant has been sealed off from the outside world after a COVID outbreak that forced employees to live and work on site. And what videos obtained by CNN show are filthy conditions, garbage piling up in the hallway. The factory plunged into chaos. Videos showed workers scrambling, fighting to get enough food and supplies. Then came the exodus. Masses of workers walked miles along highways to escape the plant. Analysts estimate this factory produces more than half of Apple's iPhones. Apple already warned customers they'll need to wait even longer to get their new products because of China's COVID lockdowns. So to attract workers, Foxconn promised higher pay and bonuses. New workers signed up. But when they got to the factory, the pay package was worse than what Foxconn advertised. A Foxconn employee said workers felt cheated, leading to thousands of people protesting. Foxconn later blamed the payment discrepancy on a, quote, technical error, and sent text messages to workers offering to pay them $1,400 to quit and go. Soon after, videos showed long lines of workers boarding buses to leave the factory. Their departure, possibly putting an end to another violent and dramatic scene, but increasing the pressure on Apple. It's just the latest victim of China's zero COVID policy.
Zhengzhou City, the place where that factory is located, they've just announced they're going to be lifting the lockdown, but that's not going to immediately reverse the damage for Apple. And the damage is huge. Analysts are estimating it was costing Apple roughly $1 billion a week. in lost iPhone sales, Aaron.
Wow, it's incredible. It shows why the global story here is so significant. But the human cost and what they are enduring, just horrific. Thank you so much, Selena, live from Beijing. And after Selena's report, I want to bring you more now of our conversation earlier with Hao. He is from the eastern part of China. He is now studying in England. And this is an interview you'll see only here. I began by asking him about his family, who are still in China. I asked whether he's worried about them. Here's his response.
Yeah, absolutely worried about them. But I think I still need to do something because some people in China, they are protesting against the government. They are taking much bigger risk than me. So even if I am worried, but I have to do this.
When you say you have to do this, what made you decide to actually protest?
My peers and I have my duty to do something to call for their human rights and a normal life for the people in China.
Have you spoken to your friends who are in China, and are they scared?
They are mostly worried about what will happen after these protests and after the lockdown, because the Chinese government is imposing restrictions even harder on the control of the speech, of assembly, and on demonstration. Some people were arrested during the protest, and much more worse is they are randomly checking forcing the citizens to handing their phones. They don't respect the human rights of privacy and liberty.
You experienced the lockdown in Shanghai at university, I know, before you moved to England for school. And I know they told you, Hao, that the lockdown there would be 6 to 7 days, but it ended up being 3 months. And some of the details of what you experienced are really hard and, frankly, incredible to imagine. Can you tell us about things like using the bathroom and about the food?
In the lockdown, the all access to Shanghai is controlled by the government, which means anyone that wants to transfer some resources like the food, like the vegetables, meat, they have to get an official permission from the government. The foods we eat something very bad, and some made us like stomachache, or there's some bugs in the foods and there are some residents receiving the bad vegetables, the bad meat, and even some received none of them. They are starving at home, and even someone like died because of the starving. So it's very bad. And also in the restrictions in the lockdown, we talked all night at the beginning. We played card games 15 days, but after those days, we're like, we don't want to do anything. We just lie down on a bed and staring at the ceiling, wasting our time because our spirit is actually exhausted.
How the world is watching these protests now and wondering how big this will get and whether this is about more than just zero COVID, whether it's about freedom in a bigger sense. What do you think of Xi Jinping's leadership?
I think it's a continuous dictatorship of the country, because there are many people not comfortable and agree with him, but no one can just maybe say, they can't speak out that they don't like him, because if you do, you might be monitored and maybe you'll be arrested, maybe you're in custody. Is like a control of your liberty.
Thanks to Hao for the courage to speak out. Out front now, Yasheng Huang, professor at MIT's Sloan School of Management and author of the upcoming book about China, The Rise and Fall of the East, along with Dr. Larry Brilliant, an epidemiologist who helped eradicate smallpox. He studied the Chinese vaccine for COVID and has been able to compare it, side by side to Pfizer, Moderna, and others. Thanks very much to both of you. Dr. Brilliant, you know, you hear Hal there, and obviously, you know, we're calling him Hal, and we're pixelating his face, because even though he isn't in China, he is afraid to show his face. You know, he obviously has protested. His family is still in China. He's passionate enough to protest. Many, though, are now living in fear. So the question for you is, if China were to drop the zero COVID policy, right, if they were to decide this is so serious, we need to just drop it, we need to end the lockdowns and just open up like the U.S. is, like Europe is, what would happen?
Aaron, thank you for inviting me back. This is very serious epidemiologically as well. First, we should say that China has some of the best epidemiologists and virologists in the world. They know what to do. The lockdown worked before there were vaccines. And then China bet on a locally produced pair of vaccines that are simply not very effective. So if China opened up rapidly without finding another way to vaccinate and immunize people, the virus would spread everywhere. Because of the lockdowns, a very small percentage of the population has had natural immunity, the kind that you get when you've had disease. So they've neither had disease-induced immunity nor vaccine-induced immunity. And there may be 500 million to a billion people who are immunologically naive, unready to meet an Omicron subvariant or any other variant of this disease. It's a very dangerous situation epidemiologically as well.
So you're saying millions of, you know, even if you have, say, strains are less virulent, and I know that's in question, but you'd be looking at many millions of deaths.
Well, I mean, look at what we saw in Hong Kong only a few months ago when Omicron infected Hong Kong and the elderly population had not been vaccinated. They had not been infected before, and they had the highest death rate in the world. I have seen estimates that if China opened up without an effective vaccination program, you would be seeing deaths that would exceed a million in a very short period of time. And that, of course, would be terrible for China. I want to point out it'd be terrible for the world if hundreds of millions of people got COVID and those virus replicated and mutated and it kept on going.
Yeah.
This disease would restart all over again.
So, look, that's all very sobering. And Professor Huang, you know, look, the reality is, though, because of these lockdowns and you know, you heard Hal describing, I mean, just like the complete spiritual exhaustion, right? That finally, after weeks, they just stare at the ceiling. We've seen protests in at least 17 cities across China. This is something we've never seen before like this. What is all of this doing to Xi's government and his image internally?
I think it is the government now is in a bind. If they ease the lockdown, they are going to have the kind of consequences that Dr. Brilliant just described. If they don't, they are facing economic pressures, political pressures, and psychological pressures. The mistake, the folly, is that they failed to use the window of opportunity after the initial success controlling the outbreak in Wuhan to effectively vaccinate the elderly and the population. They've been relying on this zero COVID policy for too long without taking care of the vaccination problem. In terms of the damage to the regime,
yes.
Either way, there's going to be damage. You relax the controls, you have many people getting sick, some people die, you get the damage from there. If you don't, the economy is suffering terribly, people are suffering terribly, there will be further protests. So either way, it is not a good situation.
No, and Dr. Brilliant, is it as simple as if China had just used the other vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, this would all be prevented?
You know, they've had a very effective vaccination program in terms of number of people vaccinated. Perhaps as many as 90% of the population has had even two doses of the vaccine. Had they used a more effective vaccine, then they wouldn't have the problem that they have now. There's still time. What I believe they should do is bring in enough vaccine that is effective, concentrate on the elderly population who are most likely to die if there are outbreaks, and then roll out vaccination programs city by city, simultaneously easing the lockdowns. There is a way to do it, and they're incredibly gifted people at rolling out things at scale. This is a time to do that now before it gets too late.
Professor Hong, quickly, would they do that, though, if that means using an American vaccine?
Well, this is the sticking point, and that's going to be another loss of credibility for the regime, because they have actually painted a very negative picture of the vaccines developed in the West. Now you have to back down from all that rhetoric and use the Western vaccines. So that's not going to politically help the regime. But in terms of public policy, I do believe that's the only responsible thing to do. And they should do it, even if politically they have to suffer.
Yes, yeah,
they have no choice.
Aaron,
they have no choice.
Could I point out one bit of good news, which is last week, they agreed to bring in American-made mRNA vaccines and allow vaccination, but only for foreigners. Perhaps that could be an avenue for a soft open.
All right. Thank you both.
There are not many foreigners left.
No, not many foreigners left. Yes. And even people like Hal have fled. And by the way, I want everyone to know Hal was planning to stay in China, but now he's left and doesn't plan to go back, plans to continue his career elsewhere. Another issue facing China now as a result of this. Think stories like that. Thank you both very much. And next, Attorney General Merrick Garland speaking publicly tonight about the newly named special counsel in the DOJ Trump investigations. Plus, former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan, who has been wrongfully detained in Russia, is now reportedly in a prison hospital. But his family hasn't heard from him. Whelan's brother is my guest. And record-breaking early voting numbers coming out of Georgia just 6 days before the runoff between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock. So who has the momentum? We're live in Georgia tonight. Tonight, the DOJ versus Congress, the battle between the January 6th committee and the Justice Department continuing tonight, as Attorney General Merrick Garland says he wants witness transcripts from the January 6th committee to help with the Justice Department's own criminal investigation.
We would like to have all the transcripts and all the other evidence collected by the community, so that we can use it in the ordinary course of our investigations.
Just moments ago, though, the committee chairman, Benny Thompson, who has long resisted DOJ requests to see the committee's work, saying the Justice Department will see their witness transcripts when the general public sees them. Evan Perez, who asked Garland about the committee's transcripts at that press conference, is out front. And Evan, you know, this is the thing. They're not on the same page. Everything's not in tandem, right? The committee making it clear yet again that it's not making special favors for the Justice Department.
It's just plain nuts. I mean, this is insane that this is a dispute that's been going on for months. And the department has written letters to Benny Thompson and to the committee. These are the Democrats on this committee are the ones who've been criticizing the Justice Department about the pace of investigations. And yet they are taking some actions, which is withholding these transcripts, which could help these prosecutions and these investigations from the Justice Department. Clearly, you can hear the tone of the Attorney General. He's not happy that it is still just a discussion.
No, I mean, it is incredible, right? As they're trying to, you know, with the special counsel, make these big decisions on indictments. And I know sources are telling you that the committee will hold a crucial meeting this week to talk about whether to make criminal referrals to the Justice Department, including one for former President Trump, right, who, of course, did not cooperate with their subpoena. What more do you know about all this?
Well, we know that a subcommittee is going to meet Friday. They're going to have important decisions, including on whether they're to make referrals on obstruction, on perjury. These are big ones that, you know, the committee has been talking about. You've heard a lot of members talking about it. And they could make referrals to the Justice Department. And then, of course, we're going to hear them criticize the department for not moving quickly enough to bring those possible prosecutions.
So Garland also talked about the special counsel, and I know everyone's focused on this, right? The special counsel, what is he doing? Where is he? When are we going to know if they indict? Of course, Garland appointed this special counsel to oversee the investigations related to former President Trump, related to January 6th, as well as the Mar-a-Lago documents. What did Garland say?
Well, we know now that they met in person, and the special counsel has now been meeting with members of the team that are doing these investigations, Aaron. And one of the criticisms I think you heard from people on the left, as well as the former president's supporters, was that this would drag out these investigations. Disappointment would drag out these investigations. And, you know, what you heard from Garland today is that that is not going to happen, that he's already getting his work going with the teams that are already, you know, underway with these investigations. He also talked about the fact that, there's things that we know are ongoing. For instance, you know, as you heard last night on your program, Caitlin Polans reported that you had important witnesses like Stephen Miller going into the grand jury. So clearly things have not been affected. The question is, how soon do we see action against some of the big targets that we know are in focus of this investigation?
Absolutely. Evan Perez, thank you very much. And next, concerns growing about the American Paul Whelan, who's being wrongfully detained in Russia at a penal colony. We're now learning that he has reportedly, emphasis on that word, been in a prison hospital for 2 weeks now. His brother is next. Plus, Herschel Walker, missing crucial days on the campaign trail less than a week before the runoff Senate election in Georgia. So, can he catch up? We're there live tonight. Tonight, Paul Whelan, the American who's been wrongfully detained in Russia for nearly 4 years, has reportedly been moved to a prison hospital. He hasn't been able to contact his family in a week, according to his brother. A lack of communication is raising serious concerns. Paul Whelan is serving a brutal 16-year sentence in a remote penal colony in Mordovia, the same region where Brittany Griner is currently in a penal colony. Up front now, David Whelan, Paul Whelan's brother. And David, when was the last time that anyone in your family heard from Paul?
The day before Thanksgiving. He had regular phone calls with them for quite a while. And it was just an average call, you know, things that were going on in the prison colony and things that he wanted to hear about from our mom and dad.
And I know he has, you know, made a longstanding point of, if I don't call every few days, and that's been the rules that he's been allowed to, then something's wrong. And obviously now it's been a full week. And I understand the Russians are telling you that he was sent to a prison hospital nearly 2 weeks ago. Obviously, that would mean that he would have called you from that hospital, if that's the case, when he made the call. Do you believe their claims that he's even in a prison hospital? And do they even say why?
No, I don't believe it. Paul was visited by the U.S. Embassy staff. They said he looked very healthy on November 16th. And then according to the prison, thanks to the U.S. Embassy calling them, they said that they moved Paul to a prison hospital on November 18th. And there's just no reason that he would have had to have gone for medical attention unless there had been an emergency. But he was able to call our parents on the 17th, on the 18th, and so on until the 23rd. And never mentioned that he'd been moved, never mentioned having a health issue. So I think there's something else going on here. I think it's up to the Russian government to show that Paul is where he's supposed to be, which is unfortunately in a labor colony until he is freed.
I mean, it's incredible to say that, the where he was supposed to be would be a labor colony. But obviously knowing where he is would mean so much to you. What do you think is happening?
It's hard to know. It could be benign. The Russian nation is a brittle nation. Its infrastructure breaks all the time. We've had to deal with broken phones before. And if that had been the case, it would have been an easy thing for the prison to say, you know, the phones are broken, the prisoners can't call. And then at least we would have had some confidence that was going on. But it's the story that doesn't make any sense. And of course, we worry. We've heard about the Zambian student who was in a prison near Moscow who's now been killed in Ukraine. Yes. You just never know what will happen to a prisoner in Russia.
That's right. And we are hearing about prisoners being recruited and being sent to the front lines in Ukraine. The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that the U.S. government is trying to establish contact with your brother as well to try to understand what the situation is. Are they filling you in on everything? Are they getting any answers?
I haven't heard back as far as what the State Department has heard other than what the U.S. Embassy knows, which is that they don't really know where Paul is, and they're trying to get an answer for that. And frankly, the White House, the State Department, the embassy, they've done an incredible job of, you know, keeping on the Russian government. But in the same way that they've taken Paul Russian hostage, they need to also take the opportunity to respond and say where Paul is, or else we won't know.
Well, I'm sorry. I hope that you get some answers and are able to hear from him. Of course, I know that is just small thing in the context of being 4 years into what they say is a 16-year sentence. And I know you're desperately hoping for some sort of a prisoner swap, which the U.S. government is working on, they say, for both your brother and Brittany Griner. Thank you so much, David.
Thanks for having me.
Next, Putin, desperate to boost support for his war in Ukraine, is now about to sign a law that targets his own people, claiming it will protect them from the U.S. Wait till you hear about this. Plus, the early vote shattering records in the Senate runoff in Georgia. More than 1 million ballots already cast in the race between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock. We're live on the ground with voters. Tonight, Vladimir Putin is expected to sign into law a sweeping anti-gay law that makes even praising a gay relationship a punishable crime. Comes as Putin is dealing with mounting losses in Ukraine. Fred Pleitgen tonight is out front from Moscow on the connection between these two crucial things.
For years, being gay has been extremely tough in Russia. Now it's about to get even harder. After Russian parliament passed what it calls the LGBT propaganda law, claiming in part it's a defense against U.S. influence.
I cannot put it any other way. The United States of America has become the global center of this sodomy. Let them live there. Do not touch us.
Anti-gay tirades are often embedded into coverage of what Russia calls its special military operation in Ukraine on state TV, making the war out to be part of a larger battle of Russia against the West and its alleged moral decay. Yaroslav Rasputin, a gay rights activist in Moscow, says he feels singled out.
This is the information noise that we're becoming victims of. We're being used as scapegoats to distract attention and redirect the hatred of the electorate that supports Putin and the war.
Russian President Vladimir Putin often portrays himself as the savior of traditional family values, even equating Western LGBTQ freedoms to devil worshipping.
Such a total denial of a human being, a rejection of faith and traditional values, suppression of freedom begins to look like a perverted religion, outright Satanism.
The new law bans praise of what the government considers non-traditional sexual relationships or otherwise suggesting those relationships are, quote, normal. But LGBTQ activist Renat Davlet-Gildiev, who has fled the country, says the law will essentially make it illegal to be openly gay in Russia.
The only text that I can now show publicly according to the law in Russia, in my social network, on the street, in a newspaper or in a movie, is gays are outlawed, gays are bad, and lesbians should be in jail.
Not a single Russian legislator voted against the bill. Punishment includes fines up to thousands of dollars for individuals. Foreigners could be jailed for up to 15 days and deported. Vladimir Komov heads an organization providing legal aid to the LGBTQ community, and he fears the lawyers might soon be targeted as well with significant fines for legal entities.
There are fears among lawyers that if they defend political cases like rallies or alleged gay propaganda, this may be turned against them in the future.
But activists and lawyers fear that even more of Russia's LGBTQ community will come to the conclusion that their only way to live openly will be to flee the country.
And you know, at a meeting last week, Aaron, Vladimir Putin said that he believes that Russia has been playing by others' rules for way too long now, and he's obviously out to change that. And Vladimir Putin has also been very clear that he believes that LGBT freedoms are against Russian values, as he believes that they are, and also against Russian society as well. And he certainly seems to be on his way to rolling those back. The one thing that's missing from this law now, of course, is Vladimir Putin's own signature under it. There's no doubt that will happen. I can tell you it's already sending chills through the LGBT community, at least what's left of it here in this country, Aaron.
Fred, thank you very much. Live from Moscow tonight. And next, more than 1 million voters in Georgia have already voted in the state's crucial runoff between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. And Democrats are now about to call on their biggest star to try to put them over the top. You'll see who that is. Plus, he saved the day for Team USA against Iran. Who is the star soccer player who was injured after scoring the only goal? And will he be able to play in Saturday's game? Tonight, more than 1 million votes already cast in the Georgia Senate runoff. The race between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock is shattering single-day voting records. But among Republicans, there are some concerns over Herschel Walker's decision not to campaign for 5 days around Thanksgiving. Jason Shepard, the former chairman of the Cobb County Republican Party, telling the New York Times, quote, "I think we're behind the eight ball on this one." Well, Diane Gallagher is out front as she is at a Walker campaign event. So, Diane, I mean, you know, coming off the campaign trail in this early voting when we're shattering records on the votes, seems like it could be a very significant decision. Who has the momentum 6 days out from Election Day itself?
You know, Aaron, that 1 million early vote mark crossing that's something that Democrats, of course, are celebrating, feeling like that does mean that momentum might be a little bit on their side, at least in the early voting period. But look, I talked to Senator Warnock yesterday, and he told me that he was encouraged by the early robust turnout, but he didn't want to get comfortable, noting from experience last year that these types of races tend to be very close. And look, that's likely the reason for his extremely robust campaign schedule. He is an aggressive schedule with multiple stops every single day. And he's had that essentially since the runoff period started. Now, as you mentioned, that New York Times reporting there, comparing that to the Republican Herschel Walker's campaign, which has been far less aggressive, far fewer events. He took those 5 days off from public events in a 4-week runoff period, has some Republicans concerned, as the New York Times reported. I spoke with voters, though, and supporters of both Warnock and Walker say that they feel like people are energized and that they think that that will be what pushes it through. The old cliche, turnout.
I like the fact that he's pro-America. You know, he wants to put Georgia first, and he's you know, everything that's been happening the last 2 years, he wants to go back to how it was a couple of years before. I voted for Warnock 2 years ago, and I regret it. I regret it to the bone.
Being out here to see Senator Warnock and having him kind of be part of the voice that we've been wanting for so long here in Atlanta, even though he's not Latino, we still rally behind those who have similar interests.
Now, again, because this is just a 4-week period due to that Republican-sponsored new voting law last year, time is running out in the early voting period. Aaron, just 2 days left, Thursday and Friday, for early voting. And then, of course, Election Day. So campaigns have just a few moments, just a few days to get this through.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So now, Diane, Democrats, I know, have been, you know, as you point out, right, pulling out all the stops, campaigning and trying to get turnout in their favor. One of the party's biggest stars is back in the state tomorrow.
Yeah, former President Barack Obama returning to Georgia to campaign for Senator Warnock in those last final days before the election, similar to what he did before the general election here. He is still a huge star within the party and here with Democrats in the state of Georgia. Of course, the former First Lady, Michelle Obama, also recorded a robocall that went out to voters in the state. Now, look, on the Republican side, former President Donald Trump not coming to the Peach State to campaign in person for Herschel Walker, but he is going to hold a telerally before Election Day, Aaron.
All right, Diane, thank you very much. And Diane, as you can see, is in Rome, Georgia tonight. And next, the man known as Captain America scored the winning goal against Iran in the World Cup, but he was also then injured. Will Christian Pulisic be able to play Saturday? Tonight, all eyes on the 24-year-old soccer star Christian Pulisic, the man dubbed Captain America, who scored Team USA's only goal against Iran and ended up in the hospital after. Andy Scholes is out front.
U.S. soccer star Christian Pulisic sending Americans into a frenzy with his goal in the 38th minute against Iran.
USA!
The man nicknamed Captain America by fans coming through with a signature goal, sending Team USA through to the knockout phase. But the 24-year-old's game-winning goal came with a cost, as the star forward was forced to leave the game at halftime with an injury.
Hopefully he'll be ready for the game against Netherlands.
For years, Pulisic has been deemed the great next hope for U.S. soccer and is finally coming to fruition. Pulisic was born in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and soccer has always been a part of his life.
Christian was really learned to walk with a soccer ball at his foot.
Both of Pulisic's parents played collegiate soccer at George Mason, and Pulisic played in the U.S. developmental program at a young age before starting his professional career with Borussia Dortmund in Germany when he was 16. When he was just 17, Pulisic became the youngest U.S. player to appear in a World Cup qualifying match. But in 2018, Pulisic and Team USA suffered heartbreak, failing to qualify for the World Cup. After the final whistle, a devastated 19-year-old Pulisic crouched down, covering his face.
It just wasn't meant to be for that World Cup for us. That's how I always looked at it.
In 2019, Pulisic signed with Chelsea in a move that cost the Premier League club $73 million, which made Pulisic the most expensive player to date from the United States. 2 years later, that move paying off as Chelsea would win the Champions League, making Pulisic just the second player from the U.S. to do so.
Where do you think this pressure is coming from?
Everyone.
Pulisic has been the main pitch man for Team USA for this World Cup, and he's delivered under the pressure. Will he play on Saturday? According to an online post from his hospital bed, he says he'll be ready. The team says Pulisic is day-to-day, but as he greeted his teammates yesterday after the win, it's hard to imagine him missing this moment.
Knowing a lot of these guys for so long and being able to do it with them, you know, by my side is definitely special and, you know, hopefully a moment that we're going to cherish for the rest of our lives.
In Atlanta, Andy Scholes, CNN.
Thanks for joining us. AC360 starts now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country. Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.